Wellness on Wednesday, March 14th. And should I open a work session?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2372. We have been working very hard, as you can see, for the last 25 minutes, and also yesterday and last evening, and we still have amendments coming to this bill. I am so disappointed. I really wanted to get this bill out today, but it was not going to be exactly what we wanted, so we need to work on this a little bit more. So I really apologize to those of you who came today. And could you put, let's see, I know Dan Garrett is here, Dan Gardner from Boley. Was there anybody else here who was here because of this bill? Obviously Reagan from Rosenbaum's office. So I will be in contact with all of you so that we make sure that we've got the amendments exactly as we want them. If I haven't had a chance to contact you, would you please contact me? I'm looking especially at you, Mr. Gardner. We want to make sure this is exactly what we want. We've got LC today who has worked really hard with us today, and we really appreciate all the work you've done. A little bit more work, and hopefully we'll get it out on Friday. So I thank you for the indulgence of the committee, and we'll be working even harder on this. So anything more to add to this? Yes, my formal intention is to bring this back on Friday with the amendments. Hopefully they will be in a very clear form, and so, and hopefully we'll get them to you tomorrow so you've got a chance to look at them before we vote for them on Friday. So thank you so much. Any questions from the committee? All right, I will close the work session on House Bill 2372 and open the work session on House Bill 2189. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2189 would clarify the mandatory child abuse reporting requirement. And Chair, there is, to alert the members of the committee, there is a dash 4 amendment that you should all have, which is the latest amendment, which would supersede other amendments. It's the only amendment, I think, which would be up for your consideration today.
Mickey Cerise, could you come up, please? Is he still here? There he is. And explain this amendment, please.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mickey Cerise. I'm Deputy Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services, and I work in the Division of Children, Adults, and Families. The dash 4 amendments, and I don't have a copy of them here, but I did read them before I came to the table, are the amendments that DHS is recommending that will change the definition of threat of harm as it exists in the statute, but not substantially, thank you, but not substantially alter the definition of threat of harm. In other words, we were very careful in our process to craft the definition, not to broaden nor narrow the definition of threat of harm. We wanted to leave it exactly the same, which really proved to be quite a challenge, I might add, as we went through this process. And basically, that the dash 4 amendment then deletes the other statutes in the original bill that referenced likely to, because that was the phrase that our work group and our legal counsel said actually broadened the definition of threat of harm. So these amendments take away those chapters that had likely to in the original bill, and also changes the definition of threat of harm to kind of a neutral change and not one that broadens nor narrows.
And could you please point us to which line that is?
The definition is on page 2, and it's in bold, and it's J. And that's the proposed definition today from the department. And on page 1, line 4 where it says lines 5 through 31 and delete pages 2 through 8. That is deleting those chapters that the original bill had included, like the language likely to. So by deleting those sections, those chapters actually go back to status quo.
Mr. Cerise, could you, it's been a while since we've heard this bill, could you please explain to the committee why this bill is necessary?
Yes, ma'am. In working with a National Resource Center that came to Oregon a couple of years ago, one of the recommendations is that we need to clarify for our workers the work that they're doing, the roles that a caseworker has, and roles of the various people that work in child welfare. And one of the areas that we saw a need to clarify was the definition of threat of harm. And as a result of that, we proposed to the governor, and the governor accepted, a concept that would allow us to change the definition for clarification only. We were not interested in a substantive change, broadening or narrowing that definition. I believe that would be a much larger work group than what we originally formed, and probably one that would take a little bit longer than what this work group met to come up with this definition. So a pretty simple task that turned into a pretty difficult amount of work, I think, to get to this point. When you first had the public hearing on 2189, we testified that the bill, as it was written, had some unintended consequences. And that feedback came to us not only from the legal counsel from DHS, but also legal counsel from the work group members, which also represented were represented by the defense bar, the Oregon Medical Association, and they had concerns as mandatory reporters. As the child welfare agency, we were not looking at it from quite that perspective. We were looking at it from the perspective of a definition that we could use to train caseworkers and workers could refer to, and it would make sense to them. So we agreed with them that this was broadening the definition in the original bill, and we agreed to work with them to make that definition more neutral and at the same time clarify for our workers. So that's where we are today.
Okay. Any questions of this witness?
Representative Cote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for being here today, and thank you for entertaining all my questions about this. I think my concern, could you explain to me why a statutory change is necessary to improve training for workers? If there's confusion among the workers about what they're doing, are they going back to the statute? I mean, this, you know, what we do in rules and what we do in procedures. Can you fill me in a little bit more about that? Because, you know, I'm still questioning the need to change the definition to improve our process.
That's a good question. Chair Tomei and Representative Kotak, and I may not be the best one to answer this, but my understanding, I do have a keen concern about the training that we do offer to our caseworkers. We do use the law to help develop the rules that we have. And in the area of child abuse, the definitions of child abuse, we take those pretty literally from the law, and we use those not only in rule and in our policies, but also in our training. What we were experiencing when we surveyed our caseworkers across the state is that we were quite literally all over the map, and what people were considering was a threat of harm. So our intent in this legislation is if we can make this clearer in statute, then we can move that to rule, we can move that to training, and hopefully it would not only be a clarification for our caseworkers, but it would also be clarification for mandatory reporters and anyone else that might use that statute for various reasons. We often have work groups that work on child welfare issues, and we often refer back to certain definitions in the statute when we're doing that. So our intent is to make this a little clearer, and we want to use it primarily for training purposes. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the training issue, and I understand that statute directs what you do in rule and in procedures. There's been concern statewide that the lack of consistency among how we do things in our offices is a training issue. I know this issue's been raised. I know it was front and center in the Holder report. We didn't have consistency. You know, we've got SD service districts across state kind of doing their own thing in some people's perceptions, and so we're trying to tighten that up. But again, you know, what your original intent was to take threat of harm out of the abuse statute, because that was a concern. Mm-hmm. But here we are, the definition is still in the abuse statute, and we're making changes that, while maybe neutrally don't affect how people interpret threat of harm. I didn't think the old definition was that confusing. I think, you know, if you provide proper guidance. I don't know. I just, you know, can you speak to the fact that it is back in the abuse statute? Your original bill took it out completely.
Well, with your permission, might invite Linda Guss to the table. She's our legal counsel, might have a better explanation, certainly a more legal one than I would be able to articulate. I do know that when the work group, Chair Tomei and Representative Kotek, I do know when the work group began and we were looking at that, I think there was an intent. The original concept, I think, was much broader than where we wanted to go, which was to change the definition. Most of the people that I have talked to, I think, believe that maybe threat of harm would be better in another statute, but my understanding is that that would probably take a little more effort than what this concept was intending to do on that. And if you want, I'm guessing it has something to do with structurally the way the law, where it's sitting in the law. I do remember one of the comments being made by a group member that Oregon is fairly unique in that we do have our child abuse definitions in the mandatory reporting chapter, and I think that creates some concerns. And I believe there is a desire to maybe look at that, but I think that is a pretty large project to take on. Probably a good interim work group.
Thank you.
Ms. Guss, would you like to come up and testify? And could you identify yourself, please?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Linda Guss. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice, and I'm here at the request of the Department of Human Services. My primary responsibility at the Department of Justice is to provide legal advice to the Department of Human Services Child Welfare Program, and I've been doing that for about the last 10 years. These amendments have been some of the most challenging to try and craft in a way that retains the current intent without broadening or narrowing the duty to report. As originally drafted, although the definition of threat of harm was removed, what the work group did was create a duty for mandatory reporters to report abuse or situations where a child was likely to be abused. So it really did retain a threat of harm duty to a duty to report a likely abuse situation. That simply moved the duty, the trigger for reporting that threatened harm in a different place. As opposed to having it defined as abuse, it moved it into the statute that imposed the duty on reporters to report. In looking at other state statutes and the definitions of all the words that we've been talking about, and after having a full review of the proposed language by a wide community of mandatory reporters, the decision was made, of course, to put a definition back in to the statute. And as Mr. Cerise has said, it really is intended to help not only DHS in terms of them understanding what their duties are to investigate child abuse, but also the added benefit is that it can assist mandatory reporters to better understand what they are obligated to report. As currently drafted, the amendment directs reporters back to the list of other abuse situations and tells mandatory reporters that if there is a substantial threat that a child will experience one of those situations, then that triggers the duty to report. So that was the intent of this language as currently drafted in the amendment.
Any questions of this witness? Representative Gelser.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I wanted to thank Mickey and Una for being so helpful and taking so much time to try to answer my questions and concerns. One of the there are two parts that I'm stuck on with this language. And the first is that it's my understanding that part of this, as you testified a little bit ago, was to assist with training and to make it more clear in the statute what the standard was. But if I look at the language as it is, the proposed language, the amendment, is the existence of circumstances that create a substantial threat that a child will experience or be subjected to any of the conditions or circumstances described in this paragraph, versus the initial proposed language, which was situations in which children are abused or likely to suffer abuse. To me, it seems like the original language in the bill would be much more clear for individuals looking to the statute for guidance about what their responsibilities are, and certainly for that layperson that you indicated that might be out there using the statute to read. So I'm wondering if this really accomplishes your desire to have clearer language to help clarify for workers and people that are doing off-the-shelf statute reading to understand what their obligations are in relation to reporting abuse and potential abuse.
Chair Tomei and Representative Gelser, I appreciate that question. As a layperson social worker, I would agree with you that language probably sounds clearer, but my understanding is that language actually broadens that definition, which moves it outside of the scope of what we wanted to do in the concept that we move forward. As Linda described, I think the difference with this proposal is that it does reference all of the abuse categories above, and I'm not sure if the first the current definition in the ORS actually is as clear about doing that. It almost appears as a standalone in the statute, and when our workers read it, we do have a lot of questions that we have to answer regarding how does that threat of harm fit within that category. What I'm hearing Linda say and what I think this does is that it leaves the abuse and neglect definitions the same, and then threat of harm simply references that if there is that circumstance of a threat and harm in any of those circumstances, then that falls under this particular definition.
Follow up.
One of the other concerns that I have is that you've testified that the discomfort with the language that's proposed in the original bill, which talks about a child likely to experience abuse, that the stakeholders are concerned about that because it expands the current obligation or responsibility. So do I understand that to mean that a physician, a teacher, a legislator, any mandatory reporter is not mandated to report when they think a child is likely to suffer abuse? They have to know that the child really will suffer abuse before they're mandated to call?
Chair Tomei and Representative Gelser, that's not my understanding. I think that's why we are looking at threat and harm. I think the whole idea behind threat and harm is that it's a potential future event that someone is reporting.
Can I follow up?
I
guess my concern, though, is that when we met and discussed this issue, and you at that time, and I understand we were having a layperson's conversation rather than a legal conversation, the argument that this basically says you have to report likely abuse makes it difficult for me to understand why we can't make that clarification in statute and do likely. And if it broadens, I have a hard time understanding why a mandatory reporter would be opposed to providing that necessary protection to children of reporting likely abuse. If a child is likely to suffer abuse, it seems that all of us would agree we want that instance reported so that we can protect that child. To me, because this language has come here in this bill that adds that language, likely to suffer abuse, and the conversation we're having here today is to substitute amendments, what the committee is being asked to do is to narrow that responsibility that's laid out here and to be saying through this conversation that you only have to report if you are confident that the child will suffer abuse rather than proactively reporting when you think a child is likely having that opportunity to intervene before the child has become injured or harmed.
Well, and Chair Tomei and Representative Gelser, I'm going to start the answer on this, and I may look to Linda to help with some of the technical wording and why we have some concerns. But as you mentioned, I do think that we do believe that it broadens the definition, and again, that was not the intent of the concept. I do think that the phrase to create a substantial threat does imply that future and that likely to that you and I discussed, and where I might agree as a layperson and a social worker that likely to is an easier term to relate to, and as opposed to substantial threat, it doesn't fit into the legal framework and our concept, which was not to broaden. And again, we received that from a number of work group members who were represented by legal counsel. So these were attorneys that were looking at the language of the law. And very often when we get down to what we call the wordsmithing, we look to our attorneys to make sure that we're not going to have something in statute that during the next 2 years we have an unintended consequence that we have to live with until the next legislative session for effect. So anything to add, Linda?
Representative Tomei and Representative Gelser, again, as Mickey said, wordsmithing this has really presented quite a challenge, I think. And, of course, reasonable minds can disagree about what words might be better or not as good. I think that the language as currently drafted does require that a mandatory reporter report if there's a threat, which that means the reporter must look at the current circumstances and determine whether there is a threat to that child in terms of a threat that the child will be abused. So that does require some looking into the future and sorting out whether the circumstances actually lead to a belief there's a threat. One of the proposals was that the amendment should read that there's a substantial threat that a child likely could experience or that a child may likely. As I've looked at that language, one of the current concerns that I've had is that looking into the future and determining whether there's a threat does require some degree of speculation. If it requires a threat that someone may be abused, that seems to require two levels of speculation, that there's first a threat and then that something may happen. And by saying there's a threat that something may likely, that's actually seems to be 3 degrees of speculation, because may and likely both mean probably. So it would be a threat that something probably will happen. Again, the wordsmithing has turned into a very difficult challenge. But as I have looked at this, and I think as other attorneys have looked at this, this language does present some clarity for reporters to understand that they have to report that threat if the child will be abused. And that does require reporting if there's a threat, not only if the child has already been abused.
Representative Coquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just change gears just a second. So my reading of this is the way it's constructed with the amendment, it ties it back to abuse. So essentially a call comes in and there's threat of harm as it relates to anything that's in the above paragraph. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Domain, Representative Kotek. Yes, so it directs everyone back to that list of abuse and neglect situations.
And I could see why that, thank you, and I could see why that would provide more clarity. Here's my issue is, we currently track threat of harm. And often, what we track is what we care about. And so my question is, how will this category be tracked from here on out? Would you be tracking threat of harm as it relates to the type of abuse? For example, you would no longer be tracking threat of harm. You would be saying that the report comes in, it's a threat of harm for possible, I don't know, neglect. So that becomes a neglect report and not a threat of harm report. I'm wondering if you've talked about how you're going to track in terms of the reporting when they come in the door.
Well, and Chair Tomei and Representative Cote, we do track threat of harm as a disposition, as an outcome. What we don't track is the threat of harm coming in as a report. So if and a mandatory reporter would not call us and say, I have a threat of harm, I want to report. They would simply report an issue that they suspect is happening or may happen or has happened. We do track threat of harm as we close out an assessment, and if it is a founded, unfounded, unable to determine assessment, it may list threat of harm as the condition that we were looking at during that assessment. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Do you have a thank you. Do you have an intent to change that? Because with how you're changing the definition?
To change the...
The disposition issue.
No, I don't think we do. I think this is still a threat of harm.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Tomei and Representative Kotek, Linda just reminded me that we do track threat of harm in the various categories of the abuse. So we do track threat of harm for physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and call that threat of harm, neglect, threat of harm, physical abuse.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone who was on the original work group?
The original?
The original House Bill 2189.
Yeah, Chair Tomei, we actually ended up with two different work groups. I think I heard a question back there. We had an original work group that was fairly small, and as the bill came out, there were concerned members that came on, and I call that an ad hoc work group. And so, and those, even though the original members continued into the ad hoc work group, we expanded that work group, I think, pretty substantially with those that had concerns about the broadening of that term.
Okay. Is there anyone then on the later work group? David, come on, and Claudia? Okay, David.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Niebel. I work for the Oregon State Bar. I did participate in the ad hoc work group, which, to my knowledge, just met only once. That work group agreed, I think, to what has become the Dash 4 amendments. from the perspective of the Oregon State Bar, which represents lawyers who are mandatory reporters, we think that this is a good change for several reasons. One is that the threat of harm language is tied back into the rest of the definitions of abuse that occur in the statute. And I think that we also like the fact that the threat of harm is defined in terms of the existence of circumstances, which imply something that you can define objectively and something that you can see and point to that would trigger your the requirement that you report. So we are comfortable with this amendment. I think that there were red flags that went up with the use of the language about likely abuse, because I think that that would make things less clear for mandatory reporters than more clear. And I think this would be a clarification from current law and from the original bill.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Any questions? Claudia?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Black, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Medical Association. We also participate in the ad hoc work group. Our attorney had looked at the language in the original bill and felt like as though it were extremely broad and wouldn't give physicians the necessary information for determining what threshold they would be reporting. And it was a sort of a future-oriented thing. Our attorney participated in the conference call as well, and he was very concerned that physicians were having to look into the future to predict what might happen. And as Mr. Niebel indicated, adding the language to the existence of circumstances clarified that there had to be something that they could articulate the reason why they would then feel like there was a threat of harm. So we support the Dash 4 amendment.
Any questions of these two witnesses? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thanks a lot, Mickey. I appreciate that. Oh, wait, Mickey, before you go. So, Mickey, we have the fiscal analysis on the Dash 3 amendments. I'm assuming that is also accurate with the Dash 4 amendments. Is that correct?
Let me take a quick look here.
Do you have that in front of you, Mickey?
And Chair Tomei, if the fiscal is, there should not be a fiscal with the Dash 4
amendments. And that's in essence what this says about the Dash 3, so I'm assuming it's accurate regarding the Dash 4.
That's correct.
Correct. Great. Thank you so much. Okay. Would someone like to move to attach the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2189?
Madam Chair, I'll move that the Dash 4 amendments be adopted for House Bill 2189.
Representative Maurer moves that we adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2189. Any discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. An objection? Okay, we'll take a roll call, please.
Representative Cowan.
Yes.
Representative Gelser.
No.
Representative Gillum.
Aye.
Representative Kotek.
No.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Excuse?
And Chair Tomei.
Aye. Okay, the amendments, the Dash 4 amendments have been adopted to the House Bill 2189. And I would, Representative Cowan, would you like to make a motion to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would move approval of House Bill 2189 as amended.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
If I might comment.
Please,
just
do.
Briefly, I've been outside of this whole spectrum. I don't have any insider familiarity with the process, so I've been looking at this as a strictly layperson, which to me are the eyes that you need to put into this. If I were or if I am a mandatory reporter, what do I need to know to fulfill my obligation to children? And I really like the amendment, and it makes sense to me, because as I've listened to some of the comments, what exactly does constitute a threat? Is something likely to happen? Why is it likely to happen? When I look at the wording and it says, I need to kind of think about what the circumstances are and say that because of these circumstances, I perceive that there's a threat to this child, and that would then cause me to report. This amendment makes the most sense to me in the language that I've heard as a complete layperson in this. So that's the reason I'm supporting it this way.
Thank you, Representative Cowan. And I would point out that all of us are mandatory reporters.
I understand that, yes.
Representative Gelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to be supporting this bill, but I wanted to again thank the department for being so open in trying to address my concerns. And it really comes back to me. I know that part of this is budget and the way that we are able to staff our programs, but I would like to see the broadest possible description of abuse reporting, because people are hesitant to report abuse, and I don't think that it is unreasonable to ask a physician, to ask an attorney, to ask a legislator to use their good judgment to look into the future and be able to make a report, even if they're not confident that abuse is going to happen. I would like for us to be able to protect children proactively. That's why I won't be supporting the bill. But I do appreciate the efforts to help me understand and understand that reasonable people can disagree.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for allowing us to discuss this at length. And I also want to thank the department and the stakeholders. Many of you have had conversations with us in the last couple of days. I intended to vote no on this when I came in this morning. I'm going to vote yes. I voted no for the amendments because of the process that which we went from the original bill to what we have now. I still have issues with that. I don't think it's unreasonable to talk about expanding our reporting requirements and to take a bill and then respond to the concerns of mandatory reporters, although you have very valid concerns. It does not get to the broader concept of making sure no child falls through the cracks. And I think what we're talking about here is a threshold for reporting and knowing what's going on in the community. That being said, I do think the Dash 4s, reluctantly, I will say, will probably add some consistency. And what I'd like us to do as an interim committee is come back and hold the department accountable for that consistency. You need this definition. Okay. I don't want to see any less reporting. I want to see consistency in how it's applied in the departments, the offices across the state. And we have larger discussions here, as Mr. Cerise brought up, about how we actually are reporting. And maybe we have to have that bigger discussion about mandatory reporting, our reporting thresholds, how we handle all of these issues, and I hope we can come back. But I will vote yes as amended because I think it's going to get at some of the problems we have in the department, but I'm not happy about how we got to the amendments.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Kotek. And I also want to thank all the people who were involved in this, and it's been very difficult, and I appreciate the committee, all the work that you put into this also. And with that, all in favor of sending House Bill 2189 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, we'll vote aye. And the clerk call the names, please.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilson.
No.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Representative
Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Excused.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. House Bill 2189, as amended, has gotten the constitutional requirement of the majority, and so it is passed. And is it going to be? Would you like to carry this on the floor?
Absolutely.
Good. Thank you very much. All right. Any other business we need to attend to, folk? Thank you so much. And again, I apologize to the audience and to the committee for delaying the start of our meeting today. But we did some good work, and we'll finish it up and hopefully hear the breastfeeding bill on Friday and pass it out. So thank you all very much. And I will close the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness.